We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast brought to you by Rival Fantasy. Visit RivalFantasy.com or download the app today for a better way to play daily fantasy baseball. Today is Saturday, May 27th. My name is Chris Crawford. With me here is my good buddy Drew Silva. On this episode, we'll analyze the current fantasy leaderboards among hitters and identify for real or fade at the top of the standard 5x5 standard scoring categories. But for now, let's jump into the bigger headlines from the later weekday slate. And Drew, talk to me about Hunter Green, who was spectacular on Friday night.
Yeah, I first want to address the YouTube audience that I just finished a bike ride, so I'm really sweaty.
That's okay.
It's the it's the sweaty Drew experience that Chris knows and loves.
The SDE, as we like to call it.
Yeah, that's right. But hey, working out on a Saturday, I'll pat myself on the back. Actually, my Strava is public, so I can't lie to the audience. It was only a 5 mile ride.
Oh, okay. You know,
just
okay.
Just getting some sun and burning some calories. Well, I did 20 yesterday, man.
Oh, good for you, man. That's almost a marathon. Dude, you got to do 1 mile tomorrow, and you got the full marathon.
Yeah, it doesn't really work like that on a bike. I think they call it's called a Gran Fondo, and I think it's 100 kilometers, whatever. Well, that'd be about 50 miles.
Nice.
I've never done one of those. I did 60 miles in one day, but it was separated into two rides. Anyway, Hunter Green?
Yeah. He can probably bike pretty
man.
Far.
He looked, flirting with a no-hitter against the Cubs. That's probably the lead story from Friday. Love a good Friday afternoon game at Wrigley Field. You know, shout out to the Cubs for keeping our day baseball dreams alive. Green looked great, obviously. The six no-hit innings, it was 11 strikeouts, I believe he finished with, two walks. Yep. The pitch count got up pretty high. I think it was 110, so we had to hold. And then the bullpen lost the no-no. Finished the combined shutout, though, in what was a big 9-0 win for the Reds, where, I don't know, there's some reasons to be excited about that team. And I think I'd say that Green has been like pretty close to what I thought he'd be so far this season.
Sure.
There are blowups mixed in with gems. Overall, a 4.18 ERA, 1.38 whip through 11 starts. But then you look at 80 strikeouts in 56 innings. Mm-hmm. With him, you take the good with the bad. You kind of know what you were getting into when you drafted him. And I could foresee a stretch of like complete dominance where the ERA gets a lot better. I don't know if he's never going to be like a great whip guy. I don't know. Maybe down the road.
Maybe.
But then, you know, there's going to be stretches where the ERA balloons again, but he's an obvious must play every time out with the swing and miss ability. Pitch it at Fenway Park next time out on Thursday, this coming Thursday. So that'll be a cool one to watch to see how he should be able to navigate that Red Sox offense pretty well with a bunch of Ks.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's looked fantastic for a lot of the year, and then there's just a few clunkers. I really like Hunter Green, especially in the long term, but I think people forget, like, he seems to have been around so long. He's still 23 years old, which is just kind of insane to me. Like, it seems like he's been around for – that's him and Jerry Kelnick are the two oldest 23-year-olds, I think, in baseball, just because they've been around and experienced so much. But, yeah, really impressive start. Has struck out 10 in back-to-back starts. We'd love to see that. Just, you know, you got to be prepared to take some bitter or better with him, but you always want him in your lineup because of the chance that he's going to miss bats. One player that you will not be having in your lineup is Grayson Rodriguez. Unfortunately, gets demoted after a pretty awful start, and unfortunately, it became a little bit of a pattern of alternating good with bad with Grayson Rodriguez. Goes 3 1/3 innings, gives up 9 runs, 8 of them earned, walks 3, strikes out 6, allows 3 homers. I mean, if you just go by game score, which is a very, very flawed stat. Here's his, yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Very flawed stat, but it just kind of indicates what has been happening for him. From May 4th to May 26th, we have 23, 49, 10, 56, 17. And it's just a case of Grayson Rodriguez didn't show any consistency with his command. There were tons of flashes of brilliance to me that suggest that this is going to be a very good long-term pitcher, more than enough in his rookie season. This is going to happen. Another guy who's 23 years old that we're talking about. By the way, 23 times 3, the answer to that question, you already know. But anyway, with Grayson Rodriguez, there's a lot of risk.
I didn't catch that. Oh, wait. Oh, yeah, okay. Okay. That's an Ariana Grande thing, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. 34 plus 35. Oh, we're going to get fired, Drew. But the thing with Grayson Rodriguez was I thought the stuff looked good in all of his starts. The command just waned so much. And that's true for a lot of 23-year-olds. I think he's still got a shot. He's probably someone that I'm looking at adding fairly quickly when the Orioles give him another chance. Are you dropping him right now, Drew?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's league specific. My answer would be league specific if you're in like in a deep league or,
sure.
But if it's like a standard redraft 12 teamer, even as far as a 16 teamer, I think I'd just let him go and hope that I can pick him back up when I agree with you. Like when the Orioles call him back up, I'll be a lot more excited. He's just the times that we've talked about him, like, and the eye test for me, he's just super wild right now. And yeah. Obviously like the stuff is awesome. Mm-hmm. It's a common like thing with pitchers. Like he has to take that next step with the command and then he could be a Cy Young candidate. Like he has that kind of upside.
Absolutely.
But we're not there yet. And I think a little more minor league seasoning will do well for him in the long run. Did you see, is it Mike Elias, is that how you pronounce his last name? His comments the other day. And I think they were like a little bit misconstrued and he was just answering a question. Like they asked him about the trade deadline and, you know, the Orioles are off to a great start after a really fantastic step forward last year, missing out on the playoffs. But like, you know, it's clearly like a franchise on the rise. And he's like, you know, well, we have to weigh like payroll constraints. Like we're talking about the deadline. It's like he later came out and said, we expect to be buyers. And I know that he was just answering a question from a reporter, but it's like, dude, kind of read the room situation. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like just say like, oh yeah, we're going to go for it. Or not even that. Just be like, we're going to try to do what we can to improve this team. You know, like something more bland like that. I liked the over on the Orioles win total this year. I didn't really believe in their pitching.
Sure.
But man, if they add a big arm at the deadline, get Grayson Rodriguez like into form and back.
Yeah.
Get a wild card spot. Like that's a really fun, dangerous team. And I love that Camden Yards has been rocking.
Sure.
Like, you know, a great fan base. I grew up an Orioles fan, like that deserves a nice run of success. And it looks like they're built to last. And Grayson Rodriguez is a big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing that they're going to have to overcome is the most boring City Connect jerseys that I've ever seen in my entire life. You might as well have just gone into Microsoft Word and just copy pasted something onto. And to have all the fun stuff in the inside of the jersey, Drew, is just so inexplicably stupid to me. Like,
and there's so much you can do with like Baltimore, and like the Maryland flag is so cool. I grew up a Maryland Terrapins, you know, basketball team. Like, I love their old school shorts. Like, there's with that checker pattern, crabs, you know, there's like put some Old Bay seasoning on the jersey or something. Sure. Like, there's a lot you could do. The Reds ones are pretty bad too.
Yeah, so boring. So boring, yeah. Man. And I get it. People are pushing back to the fun that some of the teams had with, like, especially San Diego. And there's been – most people, I think, like them. But I think there's enough people that are like, these are just destroying baseball and stuff like that.
If you're going to do it, just go – you know, really go for it. And they did – Nike did not go for it with Cincinnati and Baltimore.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because Maryland is an Under Armour school and Nike's mad about it or something.
We must protect this house. Drew, there were a couple of big shortstop injuries that I know you wanted to talk about as well. One of them that honestly scared the ever-loving you-know-what out of me. But one positive development and one kind of negative.
Yeah, I mean, the situation with Carlos Correa is kind of fascinating. Like, it sounded really bad 24 hours ago. He was diagnosed with plantar fasciitis in his left foot earlier this week.
Right.
And then imaging scans also revealed a muscle strain in the arch of that same left foot. You would have guessed an IL stint and, like, maybe even a long-term kind of absence, but he went through a pregame workout on Friday, felt good, suddenly right back into the Twins starting lineup on Friday night against the Blue Jays, played shortstop, batted second, went 1-for-3 with 2 walks, played the full game at short. We've discussed plantar fasciitis as the medical representatives for RotoWire many times over the years. It affects people differently. It's hard to gauge how it's going to affect Correa. Like, it can be managed. Cortisone shots help. I'm assuming Correa got one that helped him get back into the lineup Friday.
Sure.
I could see stretches. I wrote this in the RotoWire news note, and I think it holds true. I could see stretches where he's going to need days off.
Sure.
And it's not like Correa's having a great season anyway, but I don't know what you do from a fantasy perspective. Like, try to trade the big name recognition to somebody who's not paying attention to the news wire. I like that he played Friday. Yeah. I'm worried about how this affects him moving forward. His numbers, again, have already been quite underwhelming. It's not like he's a big base stealer, at least. Like, he hasn't, like, stolen at all in the last 4 or 5 years. You draft him for some homers, some RBIs, some runs scored, and maybe a little batting average help. And, you know, maybe he can still give you that moving forward. I guess you feel optimistic about the situation right now, but yeah, a little good and a little bad, I think, in the overall picture of the Correa situation with the plantar fasciitis. And then what you were referencing, a real bad story is Willy Adames getting hit in the head in the dugout by a foul ball off the bat of teammate Brian Anderson on Friday. Adames was, like, sitting down too, like, not like he was up on the railing, but that ball shot right through, you know, that kind of opening where the steps are and just nailed him. It was a scary scene. Had to spend the night in the hospital. He's going on the concussion IL. They probably just made that move this morning. The reports have been good so far, like, from the pregame chat with the media that Craig Counsell had on Saturday, that he was just being monitored during that overnight hospital stay and was fully alert and will be fine in the long term, but it's going to be at least a week on the 7-day concussion injured list. Adames has kind of struggled so far this year. The power's been good, but the rate stats have not. Maybe this serves as a kind of reset for him if you want to look for some sort of positive outlook on this. I guess Bryce Terang replaced him at shortstop on Friday. I guess he could get some reps at shortstop for the Brewers. Luis Urias is nearing a return. They did call up Andrew Monasterio, who was getting on base at a high clip at AAA Nashville. He has some speed. I don't know if there's a ton there. You're probably looking to the waiver wire if you're a fantasy manager with Adames, which I am in some leagues. Ezekiel Tovar is out there. Like, he's been dropped a lot, pretty widely. The Rockies' young shortstop showing a bit more spark lately. Like, there are more boring options like Chris Taylor, Enrique Hernandez, JP Crawford. I think I'd take a shot on Tovar if he's out there. We've talked about him before. I like that the Rockies kept Tovar up like through his early struggles. It's not like they had better options to turn to, but he's a toolsy talent in a good spot with the Coors Field effect. Had a walk-off RBI single the other day. Maybe that sparked something for him. He'd be my recommended pickup depending on what your waiver wire looks like.
Yeah, I like that call. And man, I got to be honest with you. The person I felt, obviously I feel terrible for Adames. I felt awful for Brian Anderson, who looked like he was on the verge of tears when during that at bat, because you just don't know what the heck is going on. But yeah, I like that call. I think Tovar is going to be a solid fantasy player. He's flawed, but he shouldn't be like this mass drop guy. I get it, but he's going to get a chance to play a bunch of games in Coors Field. Power's even starting to come on a little bit too. I like that call as somebody I'd be looking to add anyway, but here's hoping Adames is just going to be a
one. Please. I like this question though. The Hurt Foundation asks, I'll trade you Paul DeJong for Correa. Would you? I mean, imagine asking that question in April.
Like, yeah.
It's a consideration, man. Like, yeah. DeJong's been great, like a huge part of helping the Cardinals kind of just settle this, what was a horrible start to the season. And he's playing every day now at shortstop. Sure. I'm going to say I would rather have Correa.
I still rather have Correa too, but it's closer than it should be.
Like, I know. It's the fact that it's even like a something to consider is pretty wild.
I like this other question we got from the Hart Foundation as well. Ronnie Mauricio looks to be getting the call up soon. Is he an immediate pickup and stash if available? I don't know about immediate, but I would certainly be considering it. Like, he's been really good in AAA this year, showing the power, showing some speed, playing a little bit of second base, which is nice to see. Obviously, shortstop is pretty locked up for the New York Mets right now, but he will have shortstop eligibility in the majority of leagues. Yeah, he'd be somebody I would be considering on the bench to start. There is a lot of swing and miss with Ronnie Mauricio. I have extreme doubts about him hitting for average, but the power's legit. We're talking about 60 grade on the 2080 scouting scale. Steal some bases, especially with the new rules. We'll be talking about that for sure in the second half of the show about stolen bases. But yeah, absolutely somebody that I would be considering for a stash, especially in NL only, because there's not a lot of guys with more upside right now. He will probably be, if he's not in the top 10 of my imminent arrivals article on Wednesday, he will be one of the players who is being considered. This guy won't be considered for that list, but I do think he actually pitched pretty darn well for the most part in his MLB debut. So Randy Vasquez threw 4 2/3 innings, allowed 2 runs, came into the 5th inning with a shutout, and then allowed a 2-run homer to Juan Soto, who is just stupid right now, Drew. Like, this is like an incredible run he's on. It's been awesome to see because, you know, some struggles here and there, but we're being reminded that this is one of the most talented, maybe the most talented young hitter in baseball that I've ever seen. Had issues with command. He did hit 2 and he did walk 3. Was immediately demoted after the game. But I think he's somebody that I think needs to be on the radar when he gets a call up. Would you agree with that, Drew?
I didn't see any of his start, like just a couple highlights. I don't know, man. I don't like have a great take on this, to be just to be completely honest. Probably not.
Okay.
Like maybe like a streamer if he comes back up in the right matchup. Sure. And you know, the Yankees could wind up like needing him down the line. So yeah, I mean, I don't really have a great answer. I don't think there really is a great answer to that question, to be honest. Like, all right, if he's facing a bad offense.
Yeah,
sure. Like, I don't know. He'll give you innings and maybe some ERA help and like maybe some Ks, but I don't, he's not like someone that's going to be staying on a watch list for me.
That's fair.
Well, I was just going to say on the Yankees, who just tied the game up against the Padres. I have that on my little tablet here. But Giancarlo Stanton, he took on-field batting practice on Friday. He's starting a rehab assignment early next week. Could be back on the active roster for the Yankees. Head out to Dodger Stadium for a big 3-game series next weekend. And he's an L.A. native, so I feel like he's going to push to make it back for that series. That'd be a pretty cool scene. But been out since early April with that grade 2 hamstring strain. A big boost to fantasy lineups coming with that one. I found myself getting a lot of Stanton and drafts this spring because he was like relatively cheap for what he can bring with the power numbers when healthy. And he's been a hard guy to, like, you know, I'm in this one league where it's a 16 team league and there are only two IL spots. And I was like, man, I can't drop him. I had already had two players on the IL. So he was just like sitting on my bench, like just taking up space. I'm just really glad that he's finally about to come back. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. And I look forward to seeing many homers and many Yankee fans complaining about the strikeouts. We're going to analyze those current fantasy leaderboards on the hitting side. Players we like, players we don't believe in quite as much. But first, a quick commercial break. A new MLB season means it's time for a new kind of daily fantasy baseball. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform reinventing the daily and weekly games are played, and they've brought new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. Rival Fantasy's games include Fantasy Bingo, Head-to-Head Player Challenges, and Fantasy Book, where users can select over-unders odd for 2 to 5 players. With games like this, daily fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you keep your winnings. But if you lose your first entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup and use code RotoWireMLB at signup to deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival protected up to $50. Now's the time to step up to the plate and become a Rival today. Welcome to the arena.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, let's take a look at that leaderboard. So for those unfamiliar, for the 5x5, if you're one of the people who's lucky enough not to play in a 5x5 league, shots fired. Those categories are average, runs, homers, RBIs, and steals. And Drew, let's start with the average category. Who are you buying and who are you not such a fan of in that average category among the leaders right now? You're on mute, buddy. This is live. This is live.
I'm back.
Hey, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. Yeah, we did this experiment about a month into the season, and now that we're almost exactly 2 months into the season, that seems crazy, doesn't it? Yeah, we're going to do it again. Let's look at these current category leaders and try to parse through who has staying power and who doesn't. I'll give you my for real and my fade on batting average. My for real is Masataka Yoshida, who I picked as one of my draft day regrets when we did our way too early draft day regrets episode in mid-April. Sure. My regret was that I didn't have more shares of Yoshida. I still feel that way. There have been some ups and downs. He had a rough game Friday night in Arizona, but in general, he's been a huge part of the Red Sox being better than I think a lot of people thought they would be. Got that 5-year, $90 million contract coming over from Japan, where he posted ridiculous offensive numbers. He doesn't strike out. Like, he struck out 3 times Friday, but It's been a rare thing throughout his professional career, like that kind of high strikeout game. Yoshida does hit a lot of ground balls. The power has only come in spurts, but man, he just doesn't get fooled a lot. Like a really professional hitter. It's such a cliche, but like, that's what he is. I love the plate approach. I think he keeps the batting average cooking, and you know, there's going to be some rate stats that come along with it. He's had a pretty prominent lineup spot there for the Red Sox. My fade is Mauricio Dubon, who, and this is probably the most obvious one that I'm going to throw out there as we run through these names, mainly because he's obviously going to lose playing time with Jose Altuve now back in the fold for the Astros. Dubon did start at shortstop on Friday with Altuve at second. Jeremy Pena has had a weird start to his sophomore campaign. Maybe there's an angle there for Dubon at short. He can play the outfield too, but we've already seen a drop in his offensive production in recent weeks. And like, the overall picture of what he's done in his 5 years at the major league level is that he's not a great hitter. A career 253 average, 294 on base percentage, 369 career slugging percentage, and no power. And he isn't as aggressive as a base stealer as he'd like either. I think Dubon is droppable in most leagues. It was a nice run. Like, he was a really nice waiver wire pickup. He filled a great hole for the Astros for a while, but now that he's back in more of a utility role, I don't think he offers you much. And the batting average is going to revert back more toward his career norm.
Yeah. I like Mauricio Dubon. And if he changed organizations, I'd probably be more in on him because more of a chance to play every day. There was a reason why he was considered a kind of a top fantasy prospect more than like a top real life prospect, but he does offer some versatility and stuff, but definitely betting on some regression from him. I'm going with Riley Green. I've been super impressed by what he's done as of late. Like, if you just take a look at his Baseball Savant page, he's in the 60th or better in so many categories, including hard hit percentage, expected weighted on base average, expected batting average, expected slugging. Really good approach at the plate. He's walking at a nice rate. You know, there is some chase, and he will swing and miss a little bit, but not enough for me to be too concerned in that regard. And Riley Green's also really fast, and that matters for batting average because he's got a chance to beat out some throws. Like, there are going to be, when he does make weak contact, there's a chance for him to beat that stuff out. I think in the long term, Riley Green's even better of a play, but I do think he's a guy who can hit. He's hitting 297 right now. I think he's probably closer to that 280, 285. But Drew, I don't know if you noticed, there's not a lot of 300 hitters in baseball right now. This is a time where, even with this banning the shift, as so many people called it, and that obviously was absolute malarkey, but even limiting the shift, we're still seeing it's very easy to make those stops on those balls that are hit up the middle. You're seeing shortstops line up basically right behind second base. This has not been the impact that I think a lot of people thought it would be. And then my fade, it's pretty obvious, but Elias Diaz is hitting 331. To say that's unsustainable is the most unsustainable thing in history. Look, he's been great. His expected batting average is in the 91st percentile. But keep in mind, with Baseball Savant, these are not predictive stats. They are just telling you what has happened. And Elias Diaz has a long history of being a good real life catcher and a very mediocre fantasy one. If Elias Diaz ends up hitting 331, I will go ahead and bike to you in St. Louis, Drew.
Man, I was sitting like right behind home plate at a Cardinals game one time. I think it was when Diaz was still with the Pirates. And man, who was their like veteran catcher that hung around for a while?
Chris Iannetta, maybe?
I need to look this up. But anyway, I was like, Diaz was their backup. And like, I really liked his minor league numbers. I think he's in a great fit there, like at Coors Field.
For sure.
With the Rockies. But I said to him, like, he was right in front of us. And I was like, you should be starting over that guy. And he looks at me and goes, I know.
That's awesome.
I'm actually glad I couldn't remember that player's name, because that would have been a rude story to tell.
Yeah.
But I agree that batting average is going to fall off. But man, yeah, little Coors Field effect and at the sure. catcher position in fantasy, yeah. you'll yeah. take that all day, even if the average comes a little bit back down to reality. Yeah. Runs scored, let's mm-hmm. do next. I wanted to put Tyro Estrada somewhere on here. I could have fit him into a couple of different categories as a for real. I just think he's like pretty legit, and the sample size has grown now to where we can say this is at least like a solid real life player and a very dynamic fantasy talent. Like I do worry about the Giants offense allowing him the opportunity to score runs. It could be such a teammate dependent stat, but Estrada has either been batting second or leadoff for them. He had that mini fantasy breakout in 2022, 14 homers, 21 steals in 147 games. Now opens the 2023 season with a .301 average, .811 OPS, 6 homers, 13 steals, 30 runs scored through 47 games. Can play all around the diamond defensively. I guess I wonder if Estrada might be a trade candidate. He just became arbitration eligible this past offseason, so he's actually like kind of getting expensive all of a sudden for the Giants. I feel like the Giants will hang on to him because they found something here and they need offensive pieces. Like in they've kind of like elevated this post hype Yankees prospect, and he's a legitimate everyday player for them right now. I think they hang on to him, but who knows? There's like a big deadline sell-off potential, I feel like, in San Francisco with some of the pieces they have, like mostly mm-hmm. on the pitching side. But hey, they're one game above 500 right now. We can kind of table that conversation till later. Like I'm being one game above 500 is puts you in wildcard contention in the National League, and yeah. it could be that way like all year long. Sure. There's some very haves and have nots in baseball, awesome. And I think especially on the National League side. Yeah. Christian Yelich is my fade. I don't know. I admittedly just wanted to like fade him on something, and actually runs scored might be the most reliable part of his game Maybe. Right now because the Brewers are committed to him on that contract. They're committed to asking him to be part of the offensive attack at the top of the lineup. They've moved him kind of around, but leadoff or cleanup. But we're going on like a 4-year run now of Yelich being a pretty mediocre player. Mm-hmm. Coming off those 2 years in 2018, 2019, where he put up legitimately historic level fantasy production in 2018, 2019. But since the beginning of 2020, Yelich has batted .245 with a .746 OPS in pushing 1,600 plate appearances. Like, all right, that's fine, but it's not world beating. He's not a superstar. That was just kind of like a career outlier what he did those 2 years when the Brewers first got him. And
yeah,
the power has diminished. He doesn't run quite as much or as well. Just seeing a downward trend already at age 31. Not that he's like a droppable player or anything, because he is stealing bases, and mm-hmm. you know, he'll get you double digit homers, maybe pushing to 20 homers, but he's not like the 30-30 pushing 40-40 guy obviously anymore.
No, that's unfortunate, because he was really looked like he was on the verge of becoming like one of baseball's biggest stars, and then has not worked out that way. For my for real, I'm going with Alex Verdugo, who is a guy I kind of avoided in fantasy drafts, to be honest, but looks like a mistake. He has been excellent. .292, .364, .464, 5 homers, just the 3 steals, but hitting at the top of the lineup more often than not. And you look at it, that for all the reasons you were talking about with Yoshida, having guys like Rafael Devers and Justin Turner and all of the lineup, that's a good lineup. The Red Sox are going to score some runs, man. It's not great, but I think they're going to score some runs. And they're going to get Trevor Story back probably in the second half of the season. That will make them a more complete lineup. Jaron Duran is going through some struggles, but for the most part, I've been impressed with what he's done. Either way, like you look at it, him hitting at the top of that lineup, just the chance to be driven in by Rafael Devers is enough, because that guy is just stupid good. And Yoshida, for all the reasons that you implied at the top of the segment, I like Alex Verdugo. A really interesting thing here is that he's been one of the most difficult hitters to strike out in the whiff percentage, 98th percentile, and a chase rate in the 79th percentile. So it's not like he's just hacking up there. Been really impressed with what I've seen. I'm going to fade Jonathan India. And it has more to do with the fact that I just don't think the Reds lineup, as you know, there's some guys who can hit on there. I'm just not a big believer in that at the top. I will say this, though. I talked about this with Ryan. If Jonathan India is traded, I think that this changes things quite a bit. Ooh. And I think Jonathan India would be somebody that Cincinnati probably should explore trading. I don't know if you guys heard, but Cincinnati has a few infield prospects that are pretty darn good. And when Jonathan, and I hate that this is the way baseball works, but when Jonathan India is ready for that big payday, is probably not going to be worth it for their timeline at this point. So I think, and I think his value is at its highest right now. Like, you could get some legitimate stuff. There aren't a lot of middle infielders that have a lot of stuff. I got to be honest, my Seattle Mariners, I think, make a ton of sense for Jonathan India, as I watch Colton Wong just absolutely suck out loud for it. Thanks for the damaged goods, Drew. That's your fault, even though he hasn't played for the Cardinals in quite some time. But yeah, I'm fading Jonathan India, a nice player, but maybe somebody I'd be looking to sell high in fantasy on.
Yeah, I agree with those. Home runs. Luis Robert's going to be my for real. And now he's been the source of frustration for fantasy managers for many years, but just dripping with tools. And man, he's come to life over the last month. Had that brutal stretch to close out April. Got benched for a lack of hustle at one point. He was just like kind of dogging it down the first base line on, I don't know, but he could be like AL player of the month for May. A 329 batting average, 11-10 OPS, 8 homers in 23 games so far this month, 91st percentile in max exit velocity across the entire season. There are consistency issues.
Sure.
There are a lot of ebbs and flows with this dude. I wish he was stealing more bases too. He has the sprint speed to do it. But the power is there when he wants to lock in and unload. And he's been doing it lately. I got to give him credit. Like, after he got benched for lack of hustle, the White Sox are kind of, I don't know, like the Cardinals in a way, where they had this weird start to the season. But they've looked better lately. Like, they're in a better groove in general, only 5 games back of first place in the American League Central. Like, that division is interesting. My recommendation for their wins total is also suddenly looking a whole lot better. And yeah, Robert has been a huge part of this upswing with the power, which I think will continue to be reliable, even as the other parts are maybe not. He should steal more bases too. I think you can expect more speed from him moving forward. And I think the power he can sustain, you know, at least close to the level of what he's been doing so far in May. He's got like MVP potential. Yeah. We know that.
Real quick, Robert, I'm sorry to interrupt. The one thing I want to keep in mind is for the thing is, remember that there was some hamstring issues there, and that he didn't tell the team about, which was probably the biggest thing. It wasn't so much the not hustling, it was not telling the team that he was dealing with hamstring stuff. So I just wanted to say that maybe that's one of the reasons that we're not seeing the steals, and that was a big reason for the not hustling down the line. Please continue. Sorry.
No, I mean, that explains a lot. My fate is Patrick Wisdom, and it was the same the last time we did this experiment in April, and I'm sticking with it. Like, it's an easier call now than it was last month when he was leading all major league hitters in ding dongs. But yeah, reality has set in with Wisdom that he's a flawed player with good raw power, but like not a ton else to offer. He's batting 151 with a 576 OPS so far in May, 30 strikeouts and 53 at-bats, dude.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that again. 30 strikeouts and 53 at-bats for this month. Only 2 homers this month as well, after he hit 10 in the opening month of the season. Christopher Morel has been scorching hot since his well-deserved call-up back from AAA Iowa. He can command playing time at third base. When Cody Bellinger returns in center field, I don't know that I'd say Wisdom should be dropped, but we're nearing that territory, and you should have listened to me when we did this in April and sold high.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you buying on Christopher Morel as a power hitter going forward?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, he's my niece's favorite player, my niece Blair. Yeah. So yeah.
Totally fair.
That's my expert analysis.
That is as expert analysis it's going to be. Look, the strikeouts are problematic. The fact of the matter is that you're going to take a big hit in the average category with this guy. But Joey Gallo hit baseball real far, and Joey Gallo has been hitting baseball real far all year. This guy is in the 98th percentile in barrel percentage, in the 99th percentile in hard hit percentage. It's amazing to be in the 99th percentile in hard hit percentage and 30% in expected batting average. That's what happens when you strike out as much as Joey Gallo does. Yeah, you're probably going to get like a 170 to 180 average most weeks. That's frustrating as heck. But he's also going to give you a bunch of bombs, and he's going to score some runs because he walks. He's a great on base percentage player league because he has such a good approach at the plate. I love Joey Gallo. I'll be honest, I'm a little biased because my first ever credentialed event was the Futures game in Minnesota where he hit that truck during those batting practices.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I just absolutely fell in love. Like, I knew he had a bunch of power. In fact, I'd seen him play as a high school player before that, so I knew that there was plenty of pop in there. But, man, that power is so good. I love that Minnesota Park is totally fair for him. And I just think he's going to be like a 40 to 50 homer pace guy. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. And if he's giving me that, I'm okay taking the hit and average. This one's a little weird because absolutely nothing he's done suggests in 2023 to fade him. But I'm going to fade Yandy Diaz. And it's mostly based on what I've seen from him in the past. Like, look. This guy is legitimately been one of the best offensive players in baseball this year. 333, 435, 635, 12 homers, 29 RBI. Only thing he's not doing is stealing bases, which if you expect the stolen bases from Yandy Diaz, what the heck are you doing? He's barreling the baseball in the 79th percentile. That doesn't quite add up to be a guy who's on pace to hit 30 to 40 home runs. It's certainly not bad. He has a really good approach to the plate, and he's going to murder left-handed pitching. But if I could sell high on Yandy Diaz, if someone is offering me like a guy who is like a legitimate closer to top 50 player to me, I'm making that move, man. Like I will take the risk of Yandy Diaz not being the 1.070 OPS guy if somebody's offering me somebody who can help me more in five categories. Could be wrong. This could be the breakout year. Yandy Diaz was an interesting prospect, and he's certainly shown the ability to hit. I just don't think he's quite this good, Drew.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's good. Mm-hmm. But I would agree with you. He's not quite this good. And if you can get like someone who's proven to be able to sustain like top 50 mm-hmm. offensive fantasy potential, I would jump all over that. Mm-hmm. Let's move over to RBIs. Sean Murphy is my for real. And, oh man, I'm going to go on a tangent here. I'm so upset. This might be like a conspiracy theory in a way, but there is reporting to back it up that the Cardinals' offseason plan centered around acquiring Murphy in a trade and spending the money that they spent on Wilson Contreras on pitching, which would have been perfect.
Uh-huh.
The Braves wanted – so, like, this comes from Ken Rosenthal and Derek Gould, so, like, you know, about as trustworthy reporters you can find. The Braves wanted Lars Nootbaar and or Brendan Donovan along with Gordon Graceffo. And I don't know if Atlanta wants one of your pitching prospects talking Graceffo, like maybe you think twice, maybe you hold on to that guy.
Well, let me interrupt you really real quick. Let me interrupt you real quick. Atlanta wanted this or Oakland wanted this?
Oakland. Jeez.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't like them trying to trade in the three-way thing.
No.
Okay. Please continue.
No, if Oakland wants one of your prospects, be like, you know, send me a rendering of a stadium. Because I haven't seen any of those. But I don't know. Like, I'm not as high on Graceffo, I guess, as like the industry is. Either way, that was like the package that Oakland wanted, and the Cardinals were not willing to give up. Murphy's been a perfect fit for Atlanta.
Yeah.
The current NL East leaders, the reigning NL East champs, 36 RBIs in 42 games, 935 OPS, 10 homers, hitting either third or cleanup most days, Travis d'Arnaud had that great start to the season before he had that concussion, which I think was like his fourth documented career concussion, and he has struggled since returning. So like, there's no challenger to Murphy for playing time at catcher. He can cycle in at DH sometimes too. There's really no challenger for like his lineup spot either. Mm-hmm. And it's a very deep Atlanta lineup. I think the RBIs are going to just keep pouring in, and he just would have been such a perfect fit for the Cardinals.
For sure. If
he had signed that extension, they would have like long-term funds to put towards pitching.
They still have long-term funds to put into pitching, Drew. Don't come on.
Of course they do. Of course.
I do know what you're saying, but please continue.
All right. Alec Baum is my fade, and he's been good at times this year. He was mm-hmm. obviously good at times last year too, but the RBI total so far, like it just outweighs the other numbers. He's at 37 RBIs right now through 51 games, Alec Baum, but only with 6 homers and 9 doubles and a 740 OPS. The struggles against right-handed pitching are problematic given that most pitchers and most human beings are right-handed. Derek Hall is going to return soon to be an option at first base. Bryce Harper could cycle in at first base eventually too. We don't really have a timetable on that, but that could happen. The Phillies have other options at third base. What if like Baum starts sitting against righties? It probably won't happen. They need him, but it's like not outside the range of outcomes that his playing time gets dinged. And again, the RBI production has just, it's not matched the rate stats. And right. So you build that natural regression into the RBI total. I think he's going to fade in that category. Like he's kind of faded in a lot of other categories. Still worth rostering. Mm-hmm. I like that you can play him at first base, third base, put him in a corner infield spot in a deeper league, but not like, I'm not expecting him to lead the league in RBIs. Like he's top 10 right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some of that has to do with the fact there are a lot of guys to drive in, but you make a good point about not a guarantee of playing time. By the way, it did come out yesterday while I was working that they're not expected to play Harper at first base until after the All-Star break. But it does sound like at least then you have a better idea. And maybe that's a position you start seeing him play more after a week of, although he could be on the All-Star game. Bryce Harper has been just stupid good since coming off of the injury.
Is that surprising?
No, it is not. I would not fade him in any category whatsoever. Drew, I'm going to make you feel better about your Cardinals, and I think Nolan Gorman is very much for real. Hitting 289, 384, 597, 13 homers. Was never a question about power with this guy. Like he had 70 power that he was showing literally like as a high school player when he was at Bishop Gorman, which, you know, friendly confines, but still the power was never a question mark. He's showing it so far this year. Expected slugging in the 92nd percentile, barreling the baseball in the 90th percentile, drawing plenty of walks, which is nice to see. You have to throw this guy a strike, which is good. A lot of swing and miss. Yes. And I do think that the average is going to drop. But I don't think the power is going to drop. And the fact that he gets to drive in Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado and Wilson Contreras, I think Wilson Contreras will be much better in the second half of the season, as frustrating as he has been. He does have a track record of getting on base at a nice little clip. I think Nolan Gorman is going to be a real RBI threat for the remainder of the year. Would not shock me if there's a bunch of guys in St. Louis who drive in right around 100 runs, and Nolan Gorman is in prime position to do just that. I kind of hate fading this guy as well, because Ryan and I talked about Adolis Garcia a lot in our shows, and I kind of was trying to back him off the cliff of him being like his least favorite player. I wonder if it's because he's a Cardinal, ex-Cardinal. Maybe he just hates the fact that Adolis Garcia.
That's definitely it, dude. as diehard of a Cardinals fan as I am, Ryan is, he like his emotions, his mood is based on what the Cardinals are doing that day. If he like needs something from him, ask him after the Cardinals win.
Pat or Ryan, who is the more emotional Cardinals fan?
Pat's just funnier, so it comes out better. I think Ryan, like, yeah, I think it goes deep with him. Like it really sways my mood too. But
sure,
yeah, I would say it's Ryan.
Try doing a YouTube show every night after your favorite team plays and see how your mood changes, by the way. But Adolis Garcia has been excellent this year. only hitting 247, but he has 14 home runs, only stolen the three bases. I think that's going to jump up. The reason I'm fading him is because I'm not sure if he's going to get the quite the same opportunities now that Corey Seager is going to get a chance to drive in Marcus Semien, and Josh Jung has been really well. And I could see Garcia going through some spurts because I've literally seen it every single year that he's been a major league player. When he's hot, oh my goodness gracious, is he hot? And when he's not, he's someone you have to wonder about dropping down on your to literally on your bench. As good as the power speed combination has been, he can go through those kinds of swings. He's on pace to drive in like 150 runs. That's obviously not sustainable. Do I think he could be a 100 RBI guy? Sure. But if somebody's offering me some quality players, similar to what we just talked about with the last couple of guys in my fades, if you can trade this guy high, I think you at least have to consider it.
Yeah, going back to Gorman, like the deal with him last year, and he still hit like what 34 homers between AAA and the majors. He couldn't like catch up to a high fastball, and if you like look at his, like you were saying, even going back to high school, like he was this huge like power prospect. The idea that he couldn't hit a high fastball, he should be feasting on high fastballs, and like so. Like, obviously, he was going to figure that out, and he has this year, and with the plate discipline improving, like, I don't mind that he's just kind of going to be a DH from now on, because I don't think he's very good defensively at second base or third.
No.
He's a little bit young to just throw into the DH role, but just do it, man.
Yeah.
Just let the kid, like, focus on hitting, and he's been awesome so far. Yeah. Stolen bases. Esteri Ruiz is worth a mention. I don't think either of us picked him, but the current MLB leader in stolen bases. We've talked about him a lot. Like it seems like almost every week. One of the first shows we did in the season, we guessed on players who were drafted outside the top 200 or top 300 who could provide like top 50 value. And I think we both agreed it would be some kind of base stealer with the pitch clock and the bigger bases. And yeah, Ruiz has been that guy. But my for real is going to be Corbin Carroll. It's not like he flew under the radar in draft prep. One of the best prospects, one of the best fantasy prospects out there with his pop and speed. Carroll injured his knee when he banged in like really hard in the outfield wall at Coors Field in late April. And there was a slump in steals and fantasy production in general in the immediate aftermath of that injury. But he's all the way back now here in late May, doing it all. 99th percentile in sprint speed, 93rd percentile max exit velocity for a player who's still really young. Just a lot of good red sliders there on the Baseball Savant page. He's the real deal, Chris. I'm going out on a limb and saying that Corbin Carroll is a good baseball player. Feeling brave on a Saturday afternoon. my faith is Wander Franco, just to make you mad. Also on this fine Saturday, I love everything that he's doing. Like the true breakout, I think we both agree, has arrived. And man, if you kept the faith heading into fantasy drafts this spring, you have been rewarded. The one part of his game that I think will drop off. Again, I love that we're finally getting a ton of counting stats from Franco. Like, I say finally, he just turned 22 years old, but the one thing I wouldn't count on being as awesome as it is right now is the steals, because the sprint speed isn't elite. 65th percentile among all MLB position players. It's not bad, but he's at 18 steals through 51 games, which is incredible. He's tried 23 stolen base attempts. He's been very aggressive. Maybe he's going to stay aggressive in that regard. I think everything else is going to be there, but maybe just don't count on this steals pace being maintained. Like he's not going to be a 60 base stealer this year or I think any point in his career. But I love everything else that we've seen so far from Franco. I just wanted to make you mad to close out the show.
Madder than a wet hen. No, I think it's a good point. And I also think part of it is because, look, stolen bases are great. They're awesome. It's been great to see. They're also a risky play, and they involve injury risk. And I think that the Rays' best player, with all due respect to some of the names that we've mentioned even today, is Wander Franco. And he's one of the most, not only for this year, for the long term. I wonder if we'll maybe see him be told to kind of slow things down a little bit, especially with how much power the Rays are showing. Like, they can be a station-to-station team, really, because they're so capable of hitting the ball over the fence. Yeah, I think he can be a 30 to 40 stolen base guy. I think the sprint speed is a little misleading. One, because his baseball acumen is through the charts. He reads pitchers so well. And two, I've seen him when he can get going, can scoop pretty good.
Yeah, but you're right. He can move.
I do like that call, that there is going to be some regression in that.
He's on like a 75 stolen base.
Yeah, that's not happening. All right. That's just not happening. That is totally fair. That is why they pay you the big bucks. I'm fading Jorge Mateo, and it's more to do with the fact that it's not to do with speed with that guy. That is one of the fastest players in baseball. He's already stolen 14 bases. My question mark is, with all of these gosh dang infielders that Baltimore has, are you really going to be playing Jorge Mateo as often as they are? Now, he's a pretty good defender. He's not great. But you've got a bunch of minor league guys, including Jordan Westberg, and Joey Ortiz, who has shown some flashes and a much better defender than Jorge Mateo. Is he going to be an everyday guy? And you need him in the lineup as fast as he is. This is could be like a John Birdie situation where over the last couple of years where he gives you the stolen bases but doesn't contribute really anywhere else. My for real, Drew, is everyone. Everyone is for real. Stolen bases are a thing. This is so uncharted territory.
Teams should be stealing more than they are, man.
Well, they 100% right? should be. Yeah, like the success rate is through the roof. And
It was like at 82% last time, which is insane.
It's insane. And I feel so bad for these catchers because they just have no shot. They can make perfect throws. I just watched Big Dumper, a.k.a. Cal Raleigh, make one of his best throws, and he had no shot because the jump was just so good, especially after that second pickoff attempt. I've loved it. It's been a lot of fun to watch. But the honest answer is all of these stolen bases are for real. There is just so much easier with the wider base and the fact that these guys get such good jumps and teams are realizing it's a great way to move guys over without having to sacrifice outs. Stolen bases are for real, Drubert.
I think that's a great take. I need your before I leave you, are the Celtics going to pull this off?
If they win
game six tonight.
If they win tonight, yes. I think 100%.
Yeah, I know.
Now, here's
tonight is game seven, honestly.
Yeah. Right? It kind of is. Yeah. I mean, look, as good as playoff Jimmy could be, and he's not giving up. He's certainly not giving up.
No, but my worry is that he's been so quiet over the last two games. It's like, oh, here comes a Jimmy game, right?
So here's a fun stat for you, by the way. There has never been a team that has come back from a best of seven hole 3-0. Do you know how many times there have been game sevens in this situation? In history?
I think it's like three, right?
It's three. There's only been three times where anyone has even gotten to the game seven. So that just tells you, like, there's a little bit of pressure on Miami now to close this thing out because, you know, they're playing with house money because they were the 8 seed or the 10 seed or whatever the heck it was. But I know you're a big Jason Tatum fan and that you've got a lot of money invested in his success. But tonight's a big one. Tonight's a real big one.
Dude. I kind of do actually have some money invested in his success. We don't need to get into that. I root for the Celtics because of Tatum, because he went to the high school that I went to, and my stepdad is the principal. So there's like a connection there with his family. Mm-hmm. But with the 0-3 deficit and Derek Jeter and A-Rod were in Miami for game four, I don't know if I can survive a game seven in Boston, like them showing, like, I'm sure Kevin Millar will be there and like Jason Veritek, Pedroia, David Ortiz. Like who was on that 04 Red Sox team?
I think I'm naming Dave players. Roberts was a big one stealing that base.
Stole that base. I think I was combining the 2013 team that beat my Cardinals too there. But I don't know if I could survive those storylines, like just reading them. If they do pull this off, it would be cool though. I guess go Celtics.
Do the Knights close it out tonight too?
I haven't been watching hockey. I can't do it. I love hockey, but after your Kraken lost, I don't support the sport anymore.
You know? Totally fair. I'm surprised the sport's actually still existing after those fat Kraken loss. Thanks everybody for joining us. This was a lot of fun. This episode was brought to you by Rival Fantasy. Go to rivalfantasy.com or download the app today and start playing a far better form of daily fantasy baseball. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Crawford_MILB. Drew is at Drew Silve. Hit like and subscribe and leave a review if you enjoy what you're hearing. And remember, there is a episode every single week during the season. Thanks again for joining us.
Before,
we'll please.
Before we go, I just want to like address my hockey comment. I love hockey. Like yes. You can tell it's yeah. just it like hurts my heart to watch hockey. When my Blues aren't doing well, it is the best live sport. It's a fantastic sport. I love hockey, but it's just like I get very emotional about hockey.
Okay, Google
Play. That's all I meant to say.
Bye, guys.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.